BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Welcome everyone to this BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Lead Education and Development Nurse for the BDNG. So today we have a very exciting podcast for all you listeners out there. We have Dr. Catherine O'Leary, who has just written a new book, which we will talk about later on in this podcast, and has done some amazing work on sleep and psoriasis, which we'll be discussing today. So welcome, Dr. Catherine. And could you quickly introduce yourself, please?
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today. So I'm Catherine. I'm a clinical psychologist. I work in South Wales in Cardiff, and I specialise in working with people with physical health conditions. And I also have psoriasis. So it developed when I was in primary school slowly. And then as a young teenager, I was diagnosed. By which point it was quite extensive.
Yeah. So you're very open about this, Catherine, aren't you? I've worked with you before. I've had the really great privilege of working with Catherine in the past, and she's actually spoken for us as well at our wellness day. So you're quite open about having psoriasis, and I know a lot of our listeners out there will have a lot of patients with psoriasis. So you've had psoriasis all of your life, is that correct?
Well, I remember getting a few patches when I was in primary school, so on my arm and on my scalp. We were just puzzled because I think with my elbow, I fell over in the playground and it just didn't heal up, which now I know is a patch of psoriasis. But at the time we were like, what on earth's going on? And then it did eventually go. And then in my teens, it started, with the patches that didn't resolve, and then more and more and more patches. But you say that I'm open talking about it, and actually I think for most of my life I've hidden my psoriasis. I've been very secretive about it, so I would tell people that I had psoriasis, but I would never, well, I wouldn't want anyone to see it. So I would go to great lengths to hide it, finding clothes to hide it, and not really wanting people to see it at all. And on holidays, trying to find somewhere with a private area that I could sunbathe because the sun is so good for my skin. Mm. But when I got to about the age of 50, I think I had a bit of a turning point. And I just, as a psychologist, I'm always encouraging my patients to sort of share how they feel and share what's going on for them. And I just thought, I'm not practicing what I preach. And I think at the same time, it was all the COVID stuff, that the COVID pandemic was happening. And I started to do more work online. So I started to reach out to the patients I was working with online, which at first felt really scary, but you kind of get used to it a little bit. So you're talking, feeling more exposed. And so when this call came out for clinical psychologists to write books from their perspective, both as someone with lived experience and as a clinical psychologist, I thought, what? Maybe I can, and maybe I should do it. So I'm trying to be more open. It doesn't always feel easy, I have to be honest. But
You've done, just being open with us, it's fantastic. And I would say 95% of our patients that we have out there, will hide it away. And, there's this, obviously this stigma that we're trying to, remove from our patients. But it's there, isn't it? And it is a lot easier. Yeah. It's a lot easier to hide away than it is to talk about it openly.
Yeah. And I think psoriasis is one of those conditions where, if you put in a lot of effort, you can, to a certain extent, hide it. So, I wouldn't go swimming. I wouldn't, if my friends were going to a spa, I wouldn't go. I remember years ago that changing rooms to try on clothes were just one big room. Like if you went into Topshop.
Right, yeah.
Not try clothes on, just so I would avoid lots of activities, and you think you're doing well managing it, but actually you're missing out quite a lot because you put such a lot of effort into hiding and stopping people from seeing your skin. And there are times when you just can't do that, and then you feel massively out of control and you struggle with that. So it's really hard. It's constant hiding, concealing, anxiety when you can't do it, you know, the feelings of shame. You never really tackle the feelings of shame, I think, when you're hiding. And I'm sure it's not just me who feels like that.
Not at all. And, you know, it's conversations we have quite frequently with some of the patients. And, you know, thank you for being so open today. It's really, you know, it's really good for you to have that voice now, I think, as, you know, obviously you've got your psychologist hat on as well. So as a healthcare professional, people really respect what you are saying. And I know you've, you know, experienced over the years the different emotions. You've had children, mm-hmm. so you've experienced the emotions with your children. And I think a lot of my patients as well, they miss out on such life events. Like you're saying, you miss out on the spa, you miss out on huge events in your life.
It's and I think in the back of your mind always, you know, how is mm-hmm. this expose me, even, you know, like going to the doctors for something entirely different, you know, you've got to have your blood pressure done and you think, oh, I'm gonna have to take my top off and they'll see my arm, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, people need to be aware of that. And also, you know, the psychological and mental health issues that go along with this as well, you know, because, you know, when you have psoriasis, it's not just the psoriasis, it's everything else that comes along with it. And one of those factors is sleep. And I know you've spoken a lot about sleep and have done a huge amount of work on sleep and how to help our patients with that as well in your book. Could you talk a wee bit to our listeners about sleep and how it's impacted your life?
Yeah, I mean, it's not one of the symptoms that you would commonly, I think, people would associate with psoriasis at all. But I think it is very common because a lot of the symptoms can affect your sleep, like itch, pain, soreness. I think some of the medications can affect sleep. And of course, if you're suffering with depression, that also affects your sleep cycle. So it is a problem that I think goes undetected and people, you know, just kind of just get used to it like they do with the other aspects of psoriasis. So I think for me, sleep has been kind of on and off. So there are times when it's very itchy and then it's harder to sleep. But I do remember one time that was really, really hard, and it was after the birth of my third child. And my skin flared up after I had each of my children. But on my third child, I think it was made doubly worse because she was a really poor sleeper as well. So I either had a crying baby or itching skin, and I just remember weeks and weeks of it being horrendous. And then the times when she was asleep and quiet, I would be laying in bed next to her, just scratching, really not able to stop itching at all, desperate to get to sleep, but awake because of my itching. And it all just became a really horrible, vicious cycle. You know, my symptoms flared up with the lack of sleep and with the scratching. And of course, not only did I have a newborn baby, I had a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old to run around after as well. So that was a really difficult period. But, you know, throughout my life, I've had periods where the itching and the soreness has been worse than others, and bits of joint pain. And then that has kept me awake at night. And it absolutely makes everything 10 times worse.
It's a vicious circle, isn't it? And, yeah. You know, like you say, I mean, you've also got young children there that, you know, will not understand mummy not sleeping or mummy feeling tired. You know, they want your full attention, and yeah. That makes it even more difficult, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you're awake at night and you're looking at the clock and you're kind of calculating how long you've been awake. And even if you fell asleep, how much sleep you could get, knowing you've got to get up. Mm. You know, even if you haven't got children, you know, having to go to work. Mm. To do other chores, you know, it's just that dread of how am I going to function tomorrow if I'm awake now and I've only got 3 hours in which to possibly get any sleep. And then of course I suppose the knock-on effect is then you're so tired, you're eating biscuits, you know, to give yourself an energy boost, you're having a Coke or something for an energy boost. You know, you're looking at your ointments, you're thinking, I haven't got time to put those on. Mm. I have energy, I haven't got the time, I'm not going to do it. you know, and that adds into that vicious cycle. So it becomes really, really hard to break. And I do remember that time when my daughter was a baby, just, you know, thinking, I am never going to break this cycle. It just felt dreadful. The lack of sleep was hideous. It went on for a very long time. Yeah, it was
really, very difficult. Yeah. And that's a good point you've made there about, you know, I've not got time to put these creams on. And I think, you know, the amount of times as healthcare professionals will sit there and say to patients, you know, you've got this cream, you've got this ointment, you put this cream on before the ointment, then you've got sun awareness, you know, on top of this. So you're talking all these creams and topicals to put on, but then you've got to get out the door to take your children to school, or you know, or you're haven't got time. And I think that's something that we don't always think about as healthcare professionals, but it's such an important point, isn't it?
Because you're not going to get up half an hour earlier when you're sleep deprived to allow creams to sink in before you get dressed. You know, and the creams come with instructions like, you know, just pop this on the plaques of psoriasis and not on your normal skin. Like, have you seen my legs? Quite a lot of patches to go for. That's hard work.
Yes.
You know, mention the ones that I can't reach on my back.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like, here's your tube. When you get to the end of the tube, you're done. That's your over. It's like, there's the next tube waiting. This treatment ends.
Yeah.
And the results are often not miraculous. So you're not really seeing a big difference either. So it's very easy to think then, you know, I just don't have time for that. You know, you know, maybe I'll stick it on my knees and my elbows, but am I putting it on my scalp? Probably not. No.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? And that's what we need to definitely think about. And like you mentioned there, you know, how do I put it on my back? And if you live alone, how do you put it on your back? You know, I mean, we say little tips how to put these creams on your back, but it's really, really difficult and mentally draining, isn't it, to do this as well?
Yeah, just adds a lot, doesn't it, to your day? I mean, I absolutely think you can build it in, but you do need support and you do need to really think about it. And you do need to weigh up, you know, the benefits that I'm going to get from this worth all this extra effort. And I think that's what we're often doing as patients, is juggling that, you know, do the benefits outweigh the disadvantages to me? And often they don't.
Mm. So because of all this, Catherine, and I know you, again, you've been phenomenal, the work that you've done in speaking about it, because of how you've felt and because what you've been through as a person with psoriasis, did that give you the inspiration to write your new book about, you know, living with psoriasis and coping with psoriasis? Was that something you'd always wanted to do, or was that something that you were inspired to do?
I think it was something that I've always thought about doing, and I think the thing that held me back was not wanting people to know about me having psoriasis. I know for sure that was the thing that was holding me back, but it was something that I always thought I should be doing, because, you know, I trained as a clinical psychologist and I worked in physical health settings, and I recognized that a lot of the stuff that I'd learned and a lot of stuff that I was information that I was giving to the patients I was working with was helpful to me as someone with psoriasis. And also know, so I'm very lucky in that I work in a service for adults with cystic fibrosis, and they have dedicated psychology time. So that means people can easily access psychological knowledge and expertise, which can help them cope with what is a very difficult condition to live with. But I know that in dermatology, we don't have the same level of psychological support. So I don't think I've ever been treated in a department that has a psychologist attached to it. I have never been asked if I want to see a psychologist. So I've felt kind of a responsibility to share my knowledge, so that even if people couldn't access a psychologist, they could get some sort of advice and self-help techniques. Because a lot of this is not rocket science. It's really just having a good understanding of how psoriasis can affect you emotionally and psychologically, and then some strategies and advice and tips and things you can do to help. So I kind of felt you know, it was kind of a mission to share what I know with others. Yeah, so I think that's what was my biggest driver, really.
Well, it's fantastic. I've had the privilege of reading some of your book, and it's definitely one I'll be recommending to my patients in the future. And you know, you've mentioned there about self-help tips and signposting, and you know, where to direct possibly our listeners' patients to. How did you, and this has taken on your psoriasis sort of persona, how did you know about how to help yourself, or did you find that out through your psychology? How did all that come about? How did you help yourself with not sleeping or mentally, or how did you look at that?
Yeah, I think it's about as I learn, you know, so part of the training that I've done and the work that I do, I really do take it on board. You know, I don't suggest things to the patients I work with unless I think it really works. So for example, if you're thinking about the sleep, I knew that my worry about sleep was making the situation worse. So as a psychologist, I understood what was happening to me at night, that I would be laying in bed fretting and worrying and panicking. And then what's happening to my body is I'm going into sort of a stress response. So my body's releasing adrenaline and cortisol, and that's not compatible with sleep. So the worrying was making my situation worse. So it's almost like taking a step back and thinking, well, what can I do to reduce the worry? And so, you know, as a psychologist, I trained in cognitive behavior therapy. So I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's the idea that the way we think can affect the way we feel and what we do or don't do. And, you know, most of us have like a running commentary going on through our heads all the time. So we're having like an internal conversation with ourselves, and that's really normal. But it just kind of plays in the background. It's kind of automatic. You know, one thought leads to another, to another, to another. And, you know, suddenly we might be thinking about someone we haven't seen for 20 years, and we're like, how did we get there? You know, your head, you know what I mean? One thought jumps to another, and, yeah. And there would have been a coherent strand, but you're just not aware of it. So I knew that we did that. I knew that I did that. So I was much more aware of my internal thought processes. And I also knew that we respond to our thoughts as if they're true. So we don't stop. We're not like, hang on a minute, that's not true. You know, we just tend to, you know, like, I'm stuck in traffic. I'm going to be late. I'm never going to get there. It's going to be awful. I'm going to lose my job, you know, and I'm catastrophizing. And at no point am I saying, well, actually, you set off an hour early, so you got loads of time. You're going to be fine. You know, I do now because I'm aware that that's what happens.
Yeah.
So if you go back to the sleep. So if I'm lying in bed thinking, I'm not going to be able to cope tomorrow, it's going to be a dreadful day tomorrow, I'm going to shout at the kids, I'm going to crash the car, I'm going to forget what I'm doing, I'm getting more and more stressed, my adrenaline's going, cortisol, I'm getting stressed, waking myself up. So it's a little bit about trying to unhook yourself from that thought process. So that's a therapy called acceptance and commitment therapy, which arises from cognitive behavioral therapy. And it's this idea that you just notice your thoughts for what they are and you don't get caught up in them.
Right.
So what I would do at night is I would just visualize a stream with leaves floating down the stream. I would notice my thoughts instead of getting caught up in this catastrophizing story of how awful it's going to be tomorrow. I would just take each thought, I'd pop it onto a leaf in my mind and just visualize it floating away. Just allowing me to have a little distance from my thinking. And then what's happening is my body's not responding to the stressful thoughts in the same way. Because actually, right at that moment in time, I was quite safe. I was in bed. There's no need for me to be making cortisol, adrenaline, my heart to be beating fast. You know, I could just let those thoughts go. And in actual fact, that's much more likely to help me get to sleep, because I'm not going into that stress mode where my body needs to be alert and awake. Does that work?
It does. It's made me think, gosh, I'll be using that myself, definitely. Yeah, it's a lovely thought. I even was visualising the stream actually in my head there and the little leaves. And I think that's just a lovely sort of avenue that patients could go down, you know. And I think it's simple, isn't it? We don't need apps. Yeah.
No, and you can do it anywhere, can't you? You know, in a traffic jam, you know, waiting for a job interview, you don't have to get caught up in those worrying thoughts that lead your body into a stress response.
Yeah.
You know, we have these amazing brains and we react to our thinking as if that thing is happening right now. But it might be something that we're worrying about that might happen in the future that never comes about.
Yeah.
Or it might just escalate. In the past that's been and gone, and you don't need to be in fight or flight mode. You know, you're here and now. So it's a little bit about practicing those kind of things all the time, which I think I do naturally because of my training as a psychologist. And the other thing I do is I practice mindfulness a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, similar theory that, you know, if you focus on the present, you can just bring down, you can calm everything down, slow it all down. So I practice that all the time, you know, when I arrive at work in the morning, I'll park my car, and instead of thinking, oh, what have I got to do today? I've got to do this and that, and my brain's going, my body's reacting to it all. I just have like a little moment of just noticing the seat I'm sat on, just noticing the temperature, just focusing on my breath in and out just for a few moments. My body's kind of reset, calm, and then I can get out of the car and go on with my day. So it's almost like the things that I do with my patients, I try to do myself. I truly believe in. And all those things have definitely helped me cope with having psoriasis, you know, absolutely without any shadow of a doubt.
Then
don't get me wrong, there have been times when I've felt really low about it. I think that's quite normal. But, you know, I think at those times, I also use my psychology. You know, it's like, what would I say to the people I work with? Well, I would encourage them to get support, to tell people how they're feeling. So instead of trying to keep it to myself, I do those things. And then that helps, you know, and that helps lift your mood and helps you recover from the depression.
It's really important, isn't it, to be a bit more sort of, it's difficult, but be a bit more open with people, isn't it, and just explain how you're feeling. And those are amazing tips, actually, just, you know, for both the listeners and I feel for themselves and also our patients as well, just to, you know, calm everything right down. And we're very guilty of overthinking. We're very quickly at going over 100 miles an hour, aren't we, through our day?
And you know, it's brilliant, we have these amazing brains, don't we, as humans. We can, you know, you can be doing one thing and thinking about something entirely different. You know, like that, have you ever had that thing where you drive home and you cannot remember?
Yeah.
Your brain was somewhere else, but you were safe, you know, you stopped at all the traffic lights and and drove in the speed limit. Our brains are amazing. You know, you wouldn't want to get rid of that, but it absolutely has consequences.
Yeah.
So that if you are, for example, so I always think about walking my dog. You know, if I'm out walking my dog, she's just enjoying the walk. She's not thinking, oh gosh, I was really naughty just 5 minutes ago. You know, I barked at that dog. She's just enjoying the walk.
Yeah.
She's moved on from that incident. Whereas sometimes I can be walking next to her and my head is somewhere entirely different, like going over something that went wrong yesterday and I'm reliving it. So my heart's beating fast, I'm feeling stressed. Actually, in that moment, I need to be more dog, you know, just be on the walk with her.
That's a good tip. Because I think it's all exercise, you know, if we go walking, running, go out with the dog, I think, you know, your mind can still wander and still go off on a tangent, and you know, you're coming home as stressed as you were when you went out with the dog,
sometimes even more so.
Absolutely. So I think it's, you know, that's a really good, another important tip, just to remember that. And you know, I was actually saying to a patient the other day, and he says, I'm outside all the time, Tina, I'm always walking. But I said, it's that me time, isn't it, just to have that me, focus on me and focus on your well-being, you know. And yes, you might be out in the country, you might be walking around, but what are you thinking?
Yes, completely. I mean, I think there are some activities that naturally. You have to focus on the activity, like crocheting or doing a jigsaw, you know, something
that's true.
Well, it's sort of, or surfing or something. So you're really in the flow. And those, you know, if you do those kinds of activities, they're great because they just keep you very much present and in the moment. And it's not that you always want to be like that, because our brains are amazing, you know, when we can plan things and we can daydream and all that. You know, I love that part of my brain too. But every now and then we just need to reduce all that stress and just bring it to the now. You know, if I'm safe now, let's just savor the moment and calm everything down a little bit.
Yeah, I think you'll definitely make a lot of our listeners today be calming down after hearing this podcast. Definitely.
I hope so. So those kind of little things are the stuff that I practice. And I think of it like almost like a toolbox of things. So I wouldn't say to people, you know, there's just do this one thing and you'll be fine and you'll cope with psoriasis. You know, it's not that simple, because at different times you're struggling with different things. So what I really try to do and bring it into the book is aspects of what I know from my whole training. So from lots of different therapies. So I'm trained in lots of different therapies, and I bring aspects of them all, hopefully, because you might need a different technique at a certain time to another time. So it's not so simple like this one thing. You know, you meditate, do mindfulness and you'll be fine. You know, great, obviously it's going to help, but it's not always the answer. I'm thinking, you know, more about sort of what I find really helpful is this idea of developing self-compassion, which I think lots of us struggle with. You know, very common to have a very self-critical internal voice, you know, where you tell yourself off for things and you berate yourself. And I work hard on developing self-compassion. It's something that I encourage in the patients that I see, and it's something that I still work on. And then, you know, if I'm critical about myself, you know, if I look at myself in the mirror, oh gosh, your skin looks awful, people are going to think it's disgusting, I pull myself up on that and think, right, what would you say to someone you really cared about, someone you loved? And I try and say it to myself. That's a regular ongoing thing that I work on all the time.
That's something we should really think about, isn't it? And something that we should, you know, sort of spread that word as well about doing that, because it does, we are very self-critical. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And I mean, as I say, I've been really fortunate to read your book, you know, a lot of your book, and I have got it on order though. I have got it on order. But I think, you know, it's not just one fix, is it? Like you've said, it goes through so many different scenarios and so much self-guidance, but also guidance that we can, you know, provide for our patients. And I think there's so many options in there. So, you know, not everybody likes maybe to run or to meditate, and I think there's so many different options in that book that can help.
Is finding what works for you.
100%.
And I think the other thing that I think I hope will be helpful is, I think it will help, because very often I think you don't really realise how you're reacting to psoriasis. I think, I know for me, you get so used to trying to hide it and shut down everything. You don't have a really good awareness of the impact it's having on your life. So I'm hoping the book will help people to think, oh my gosh, yes, you know, I do that too. And they may be able to share it with people to say, you know, it's not just a rash. You know, you think it's just a rash, but you actually have no idea what I look under my clothes and how I feel.
Yeah.
It's not just a rash.
Yeah.
I think that's important as well. It has enormous psychological consequences living with a skin condition in a society that values clear, glowing, healthy skin, and a skin condition that is constantly changing all the time. So even when it's clear, you're fearful of it coming back.
Yeah, that is true, actually. Yeah, when patients, you know, come in and they've had clearance, then mentally have to go back to it, it's very, very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah,
hugely. It's a good point. So I think, you know, you've obviously engaged our listeners here in some of the tips that you've provided there, which is fantastic. So when we have our patients in clinic now, we're really excited that we can actually provide some information through your books. So could you just share with the readers when it's available and how they can actually buy your book as well? I know we've got links through the BDNG, but it'd be really useful for people just to listen to on the that's listening to the podcast, just to know how they can buy your book.
Thank you. Well, it's coming out in, you can get your hands on a physical copy from the beginning of July. You can pre-order it right now from the publishers, who are Sequoia Books. But then from July, I believe it'll be available from most booksellers. So I think it'll be available on Amazon, Waterstones. So I think probably that's the easiest way to buy it. But you can also follow me on social media, and there'll be links too. So I'm on Instagram and I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and I have a website, copingwithpsoriasis.com, so people can link into that too.
That's great, because I mean I follow you as well, and I, you know, you've got some really great resources, you know, that you provide as well. And I've sought your help myself as well for certain aspects of sleep and other, you know, issues that that you've really helped with. And I feel that, you know, this book will definitely be on my favourites for recommending to patients, because it goes through a whole journey of somebody that's been totally honest about what's happened, but also, you know, you've experienced it and you've gone through these feelings and you've had children and, you know, you've been a mum and gone through all the, even the difficulties of being a mum, isn't it? I mean, it's tricky. And I feel that, you know, it's not just you saying to me that, right, if you do meditation, it will work. It goes through the whole processes and chapter after chapter, and it's so helpful for people that are experiencing psoriasis. It's just going to be so useful.
There's something, isn't there, about quite powerful about advice from somebody who's lived it, you know, to somebody who's I hope it will be, but I know from my own experience, when somebody is speaking from personal experience, it feels very authentic, doesn't it? And
it's hugely, hugely powerful. I think very brave of you to us also to be so honest, you know. And you've already said, you know, you used to hide it away, so, you know, to take that to a whole new level, I mean, I'm immensely proud of you, and I know you should be proud of you, and I know your family will be. And, you know, this book will definitely help a lot of other people that are out there. Can you just say to our readers again, just a couple of quick points there, the title of your book and also your website and social media, so they can follow you as well?
So the website is copingwithpsoriasis.com. The book is also called Coping with Psoriasis, and it's published by Sequoia Books. And you can follow me on Twitter as Dr. Catherine_OL, and I think on Facebook it's Coping with Psoriasis too. I think that's everything.
That's fantastic. We'll put all these links as well in after this podcast. And also, you've been you've already been to the BDNG with, you know, on our wellness day, speaking about aspects of health, but also, you know, you've written journal articles for us, and I know the one that you've written, which will be published soon, will not be the last, and I'm hoping you know, we also will have a lot of interest over the book as well, which will be fantastic. So I'd like to say a massive thank you for being so open and honest today on this podcast. It's definitely meant a lot to me, and it just makes me feel as well that I should, you know, sometimes really concentrate on myself. And you've given me some tips, which I hopefully will pass on to my patients as well. So I'd like to thank you very, very much today, Catherine, for this podcast.
Oh, thank you. It's been my absolute pleasure. And I'm delighted to talk. As you can tell, I've been talking really fast. I've got a lot to say. So now it took me, I don't know, 40 years to start talking, and now I feel like I do have a lot to say. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And if you've got, you're definitely, if you've got this 40 years of knowledge and strength in there, then we'll definitely be doing more podcasts and more journal articles with you. And on behalf of the BDNG, we'd really like to thank you, because I know you're a massive support to the BDNG. So thank you.
Thank you, Tina.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.